Welcome to The Sweetest Little Life, your sanctuary for your soul and the journey to your wellness. I'm your guide on this cosmic adventure, Courtney Hansen, and I am thrilled to embark on this transformative exploration with you. I am an author, Reiki master, your host today, and own a holistic healing center. I also am a somatic therapist, and I specialize in trauma. In each episode, we'll dive into the mystical realms of spirituality, unlocking ancient wisdom to navigate the modern challenges of this lifetime. Prepare to elevate your consciousness as we unravel the secrets of mindfulness, meditation, and the profound connections that bind us all. Our expert guests will share their insights, weaving a tapestry of inspiration and practical wisdom to guide you towards a more balanced and enlightened existence. Whether you're a seasoned spiritual seeker or just beginning your voyage, join us as we navigate the cosmic waves, exploring the boundless possibilities that await. Open your heart, expand your mind, and let the journey to your best self begin right here on The Sweetest Little Life. Get ready to transcend, transform, and thrive. The one thing that changed my life in the most profound yet gentle way is microdosing. It was always such a taboo topic growing up, considering it a drug and the perception I had on it. And then when I actually started doing it and realized the profound way that we can actually repave the neural pathways within our brain with something as simple as taking a little capsule. And then I found this amazing company called MindMend Mushrooms, and they do microdose, but they also do macrodose. And the cool thing about this is, if you're not familiar with microdose, it's really amazing for increased creativity. If you're just kind of feeling plateaued in life, the ability to overcome anxiety and having just an overall better mood. I have seen countless clients get off SSRIs that have been on them for 20 plus years. It's a way that you can step back, observe, and not be attached to the outcome, not get stuck in the monkey brain, if you will, and you literally can reset and rewire. There's also the option to macrodose, which is this profound experience that for 30 days after, your brain is literally rewiring itself in the most magical way. If this feels called to you and this plant medicine resonates and you want to know more, I highly encourage you to head to mindmendmushrooms.com. And I also have a discount code for you guys to use, so you'll get 20% off. And what's really cool about this is that when we can step back and completely allow ourselves this permission slip to heal in maybe a non-traditional way, you might be really amazed at the insights and the leaps and bounds that you begin to grow just within your own practice and your own journey, because healing's not linear. It's not a one-size-fits-all deal. So if you want that 15% off code, it is HOLISTIC, capital HOLISTIC. Again, that's mindmendmushrooms.com. Matt, welcome to The Sweetest Little Life. I'm so pumped for our conversation today. How are you?
Courtney, I'm doing well. Happy New Year, and I'm glad to be here today.
Yes, Happy New Year. Year 8. I'm ready for it. The Wood Dragon.
Is that what this is?
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome.
I only know because I had someone that did feng shui on the show and they broke it down for me. It was pretty awesome.
Okay. Very cool.
Yes. So I love stories. I like hearing our journeys and really how we got doing what we're doing today. And you can explain that way better than I can in an introduction. So would you mind sharing where you've been, where you're going, and what you do?
Sure, I can do all of the above. I think you have me on to talk about all things psychedelics and how that relates into the world of somatic therapy and Reiki and those types of things. But my journey was kind of by accident. I had some friends who hired a guide for a magic mushroom ceremony and invited me to attend. And at that point, I really was kind of certainly maybe as far as anti-drug, I just wasn't a drug user at all. But they said, you know, this is like going on a journey in your mind. You're going to learn a lot about yourself. You should try it. So I went ahead and went with the guide and did the journey with my friends. And it completely changed the way I look at the world. I was able to reconnect with my mom, who died when I was just 22. She was 49. I had all these just so powerful insights about, I'll give one example. I felt so safe and loved on this journey. And then realized in like the next instance that I don't feel safe and loved in my everyday life. And I wanted to learn more about that. So anyhow, that journey was, the whole experience was incredible. And it led me to going back to school to get a master's in psychology and neuroscience, focused on psychedelic medicine, and to go travel all over the place, trying different psychedelics by different types of practitioners, from medical doctors to shaman and everything in between. And here I am X years later talking about this and trying to pass on the information that I've learned on this journey to the people who are interested in hearing about it.
That is incredible. So I have to share with you, I accidentally macrodosed the other night. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
I microdose
every
3 months, and it has changed my life, really and truly changed my perspective. My anxiety is completely gone, like all the things, right? And as a healer, like, it's important that you're on your own healing journey too.
Of course.
And so my husband is newer to it. And I was like, hey, I'm about to cycle on my microdose. Do you want to microdose with me? And he's like, yeah, I'll do it. And I was like, cool. I forgot that one of the doses I had a 0.6 at the end of it, right? So a little bit stronger, nothing crazy, but like strong enough if you haven't done it in a while. And normally I take 0.2. So that's a jump. So I take it and I go to, and like, the day's fine. Everything's fine. I go to lay down to go to bed for the night. And I'm like, ooh, when I close my eyes, I'm seeing things. Like, that's interesting. That's never happened to me. I go take a shower and I lay back down and I get my husband over. And I'm like, hey, are you like, can you lay down and close your eyes and tell me if you're seeing things? And the craziest thing happened. One, it wasn't an accident. It was definitely on purpose that I did this, because I'm in a huge transition in my life right now in so many different areas. Like, I'm selling my house, I'm moving my business. We have so much going on. Like, everything is upside down right now in the best of ways. And so I had this connection with my guide. I've never actually gotten that. I hear people talk about like, oh, I have constant connection with my guides. I have that. And I'm like, I've never gotten that. And I got to sit and like meet my guides up close and go the journey. And I was in it until 6 a.m.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I was like, whoo. My husband was super sweet. Just sat with me and he was like, you're good. You're safe. Like, you're okay. Thank God I had that. And it was the most beautiful experience of my life. And I have been terrified to do, there's a shaman that we all work with, and he does sound healings and things like that with them and takes you on a journey. And I've always wanted to do it, but I've been terrified until that experience. It like pushed me over the edge. And my brain since then, I have been more clear than I feel I've ever been my entire life.
Courtney, that's beautiful.
That's pretty crazy. I am a firm believer.
That is wonderful. And it sounds like you did a lot of things almost by accident, right? Like, you had a support person there in case you got scared. You were in a controlled environment. You were able to not be afraid of the experience, and you just surrendered that. Okay, I took more than I expected to, and you just went with it.
Yeah.
Any big insights for you, or anything that came out of that?
Yeah, a lot came out of it, actually. Okay, I'll share the craziest thing that happened. Maybe you can tell me the neuroscience behind this. So, okay, one of the craziest things that happened is I have a lot of childhood trauma. I've done a lot of work, obviously, but it's a lifelong journey. And I have a lot of blocks in my sacral. And so sexual abuse when I was a child, things like that. And way, way, like, just blocked constantly. Like, the sacral is my spot. That anytime I do breath work, anytime I do anything, it's always in the sacral. And I could see like this black tar in certain chakras. So my heart, my sacral, my throat. And I could see this bright red light come from the left side of my body. And I got super scared at first, because red, like, we naturally associate with like what, anger and like a stronger color. And I saw this red light and then it washed over and I was like, surrender, surrender, surrender. So it's funny that you said surrender, because that was the word that kept coming up for me, was like, don't be scared. Come get in that vibration of love and not fear. And so I got in that vibration of love and this red light came and like transmuted this tar to like this crystalline, almost sparkle, if you will. And then that was when my guide showed up. And I got these lessons about people that maybe didn't have my best interests, that I've been hard, like I've been really resistant to set boundaries with. And the clarity came with like how to do it. And I could see the situation unfold. I shit you not, the same situation happened 2 days after I had my journey. And it was just like all of this clarity, I think, was the biggest thing for me. I was like leaning into the fear and the word surrender. And like, how am I showing up in my everyday life from a space of love and not fear?
That is that's incredible. So when so much with these medicines, it turns off shame, blame, and guilt. And it allows us to kind of see situations more as without these stories attached to them. And it sounds like in your case, you were able to look at a situation or set of relationships and a boundary that you weren't comfortable with and find a way to reset those. And then you were able to, it sounds like you were able to practice that resetting a couple of days later.
Yes.
And how did that conversation go?
It was beautiful. We decided to kind of go separate ways and mm-hmm. it actually really worked out, because it was, I think, in both of our best, you know, interest and moving forward, like not everyone comes with you on the journey, right? Like some people are in your life for a season and for a reason and you learn the lesson and then it's off to the next.
What do you think is the difference between the conversation you had with that person that you actually had versus what you would have had had you not had this experience ahead of time?
I was able to get into heart coherence. That was another thing that came up in my journey, was getting into my heart and out of my head. And so it was like, before you have this conversation, you need to be in heart coherence. And I know how to do that, but we don't do that in hard conversations a lot of the time. So it was like, I could watch my body language. I could watch my response. I could come at it from not a space of defense, but more from a space of like quite literally just holding space. And it was really beautiful, because I've never been able to not kind of cower down in a conversation like that and really stand firm on like, I'm holding space. I'm here. You're here. Let's talk.
I think as a culture, we are brought up in this scarcity mindset that there's not enough for everybody, that I've got to get what's mine and protect what's mine. And that can be material things, and it can be boundaries. And approaching with love, as you said, or with heart space, and knowing that it's okay, period. It's okay to have this conversation. It's okay to set these boundaries. It's okay to have loved somebody and had a relationship with somebody and for that relationship to move on. And all of that's okay and beautiful. And I think I think approaching those conversations, you've seen it. It's so powerful when you can do that. And I think that lesson applies to anything, so many things.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely not linear, right?
Mm-mm. No, not at all.
I would love, because I think one of the biggest things that I see with psychedelics or any type of plant medicine in general, right, is the fear of it. Or like you said at the beginning, like, I don't do drugs. I don't do that. Cause that's the stigma that it's been, instead of being used as actual medicine and setting that intention of that. Can you explain a little bit to the audience or someone that has been really wanting to try an experience, kind of what happens to the brain during that? I love to geek out on just the science behind it.
Happy to. I'll just do it at a real high level versus too geeky, but a number of things start to happen. One thing is your the default mode network, or the part of your brain that's the inner narrator, the one that's constantly telling us we're not good enough, we need to do more, we need to work harder, that quiets down. And when that quiets down, it's like, wow, you can really feel how much the monkey mind moves in everyday life. So that by itself is powerful.
Right.
The next thing that happens is we have these connectors in our brain that start to fire. And these are ones that when we're young, they fired. And as we age, we constantly are pruning them down to where we literally have less and less connections. And what that translates to as we get older is that we literally start thinking the same way over and over and over. So when these connections start to fire again, it shows us during that experience new ways of thinking. It reminds us that the way we are thinking isn't the only way to think. And sometimes when that happens, other connections and dots are put together that are enlightening.
Yeah.
And then your brain enters a phase of neuroplasticity. So for instance, you had this beautiful experience. You have a window now where your brain is more plastic than it normally is. So what we recommend for people who have these experiences is that you take these next at least 30 days and you gratitude journal and you meditate more than you might would. You spend some more time in nature and you start whatever it is that was important to you that came out of that experience, you spend time doing and reinforcing those behaviors because your brain is so available for that type of activity. Mm. So
that's powerful. I didn't realize it was 30 days.
It's a long period of time. Yeah, and I'm not even sure if 30 days is there's no exact number, but it's
right.
You're in a neuroplastic state. And then I think I touched on before, the other thing that happens in the brain is somehow our notions of shame, again, depends on the medicine, but in many cases, our notion of shame, blame, and guilt is turned off. And that, especially if you're looking at past traumas, if you're looking at relationship work, if you're a relationship, meaning whether it's with a partner, whether it's a parent, whether it's with a child, being able to look at what was my role in whatever interaction I'm thinking about and what was it really? And no bad anybody, I was doing the best I knew how to do at that point in time. But I can also acknowledge that maybe I did behave in a way that isn't how I would behave now with more information and being wiser. Or maybe whatever happened in that situation, I can see it wasn't my fault. It was, the example I give and I talk about in my book is having inappropriate sexual contact with a family member 10 years older when I was an early teenager, and something I was mortified about and carried around for years. Yeah. And in one of these experiences, I was right back there. And I could first realize, you know, I wasn't the adult in the room, and it wasn't, that wasn't a safe place for me to be. But I could also see her as a human without, I don't have to forgive or condone what she did, but I could look at and say, okay, well, she was really sad and really feeling unloved and really struggling with substance use. And I can understand without condoning. I can understand the humanity.
Yeah.
And then I could let it go because it doesn't do me any good to carry it on.
Yeah.
But it took 30 some years to get to that.
Right. Right. So you led me to actually my next question that I wanted to ask was psychedelics with drug abuse. I've heard really beautiful things that people have completely gotten sober, gotten clean, that have tried everything, and they've just been so hard on themselves. Because, I mean, drug abuse isn't, I personally think, the problem. It's the only solution that we know, right? So I'm sober myself. And so I think that when we're in it, we go to drugs and alcohol to fix the pain, to fix the shame, to numb it, right? To put that Band-Aid on.
I think as a culture, we have different, we look at different behaviors and judge them radically different, even if the root is the same. So we look at somebody who has a substance use challenge different than we look at somebody who is a workaholic. Mm-hmm. We look at someone who's an overeater differently than we look at someone who has a gambling addiction. But we all choose different ways to sometimes numb the pain, which alcohol certainly can do, to postpone doing the work, which any of these behaviors can do. And it's when we think about psychedelics in the repetitive thinking patterns. So when you take a psychedelic, it's not a cure, it's a catalyst. So we're taking the psychedelic to break the repetitive thinking pattern. And we break that pattern, we can then break the behavior, whatever that is. So yes, we do see that people who are challenged with substance use can take a psychedelic and see a different path and find a way to not want to take that substance anymore following that psychedelic. And it is beautiful to see. It's Bill W., who started Alcoholics Anonymous, really wanted LSD to be part of the 12-step program.
I heard that.
Mm-hmm. The thing I didn't mention with the brain before, and I'll just touch on it now because it's not as medical. It's the spiritual component. It's that in many, many, many cases of people who have a psychedelic experience, they feel like they are connected to all things and to some sacred, whatever that is for that person. Well, Bill W., when he was starting Alcoholics Anonymous, said, you know, step one is acknowledging that there's a, he used the word higher power, and he was using the word drunks, that these drunks needed a higher power. Okay. Well, LSD is a way to have a forced sacred experience and to potentially start that process. So there's a number of people who have, and a number of research, a lot of research with psychedelics for substance use. Heroin was one more that's really interesting. Lots of research coming up with iboga or ibogaine and heroin. And there's really not another medicine that we know that can.
That's the frog poison, right?
No, that's bufo or 5-MeO-DMT.
Okay.
That's DMT. Different. Ibogaine is it actually comes from iboga, which is a root found primarily in Africa, and okay. Ibogaine is an extract from it, and it's incredibly powerful, like 17-20 hour journeys, very long lasting, and it also has, unlike any other psychedelic, it actually has physical risk. There's cardiovascular risk with ibogaine, and we don't know of anything else that, if you're addicted to an opioid, can help as much as ibogaine can.
Wow. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. There's so much out there. I know someone actually who's done that. That's why I thought, for some reason, I thought it was the frog poison though. But then they said that your body gets paralyzed during it, right? Like you have to have someone help you get up and use the restroom and things like that during the iboga.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I've heard about that one. So I'd like to touch, while we're on this subject, on ketamine, because that's something that's really coming up. And I think a lot of people have a stigma on ketamine journeys. And I actually just met a ketamine psychologist in one of my classes a few weeks ago. And she was explaining to me a little bit about the journeys that she does, but also breaking down how literally people who have been on SSRIs for 20 years are getting off of them. Like, it's the stories incredible. Are just incredible. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a couple things out there. So ketamine is a medicine that you can try while still being on an SSRI.
Okay.
So that is why. So for those people who are on SSRIs and listening, this is something you can do before you taper, which is lovely. Psilocybin for most people is also one that you can do while still being on an SSRI. More than half the population responds normally to psilocybin. The next half of half just needs a larger dose. And there is 20-ish percent that doesn't respond to psilocybin. But those two you can. Before I go too deep on this, I highly recommend, if people are interested in someone to do a medical screening on them. Spiritpharmacist.com is where we recommend people go to and work with Ben Malcolm, who's a PharmD. He's a pharmacologist who specializes in psychedelic medicine and interactions. And you can pay him to do a consult, tell him specifically, what are you on? Anything you're on, blood medication or heart medication, anything, supplements. And what are you thinking about doing? And he'll talk you through the pros and cons and risks and things that you should be aware of to keep yourself safe. And what's nice about using a third party versus the shaman who is selling you a retreat or anybody else is he has nothing to sell you. He is selling you that information. You can get your own. Then you can make your own informed decision on whether you want to go try ketamine or mushrooms or ayahuasca or ibogaine or anything else. Yeah, I think that's important. That we were talking about one more thing there that you just brought up and I'm blanking here. Oh, ketamine. The other thing I'm going to caution just everybody to be aware. Ketamine, yes, it is legal. And you can go into ketamine providers and get ketamine. And not all ketamine providers are the same. So there are some that you will go in and they're going to put an IV in your arm and take your vitals and give you your ketamine journey and send you on your way. And they believe it's just a biochemical reaction. It's legal, it's medical, and it's one approach. There are others that say, you know what? All psychedelics, including ketamine, are really a biochemical, psychosocial, spiritual process. And they want you to do time setting your intentions and time afterwards integrating whatever it is that you saw. And they're going to give you kind of that wrapper around the experience. So I would just caution people as you're looking for ketamine providers, ask, what are you going to do for me? And then decide if whatever they are offering is enough for you or if you need to supplement their services with somebody else's. So a great example of that is there are a number of at-home ketamine providers where you can order ketamine lozenges to be sent to your house. That's great. And some of them have kind of these online guides. That's great. And the cost is $1,200-ish for 6 doses, which is much less than an in-clinic. So that's great. But you might need more support than they can offer that you might want to supplement with other resources. So there's no, not saying anything is good or bad, just be aware of what you're buying and ask the questions.
Yes. And I think it's important too, because where we're at on our journeys, right? And I know this is actually one of the topics I wanted to touch on was that, you know, there's ceremony and then there's actual medical reasons that you're taking it, right? You're getting off an SSRI, you're working through extreme trauma, you're doing this, you're microdosing, you're, you know, different avenues. And I know it can be very overwhelming. I know when I first got in the psychedelic world myself, just for my own medicine, I was really overwhelmed. There were so many different options and everyone has an opinion on what they've done and what works. And like, I'm not them. And so my body might respond differently than something. How do we know whether ceremony is calling, whether it's an ayahuasca retreat, whether it's microdosing, or whether it's an actual medical treatment like what we were just talking about, where you have someone hold that space for you and you're supported and it's continuous?
So there are three ways that Americans meet psychedelics these days. One is the medical model, where they want a prescription and someone with a credential kind of guiding them through their process. Another model is the decrim model. And this is the theory behind decriminalization is no adult should tell another adult that they can't put nature in their bodies. Mm. And there are kind of two branches of that. One branch is more the libertarian branch. And the other branch is the access branch. It's saying, okay, well, I might want to do the medical model, but I can't afford the medical model. So I need the decrim model so that I too can take advantage of this beautiful medicine. Super important. And another way for to meet the medicine. And then the third is the ceremony model. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act gives us great, our country was founded on religious freedom. And there's a number of psychedelic churches that believe that this is first and foremost a spiritual experience where we can do our own work and that we don't need a diagnosis. We don't need someone to tell me to prove that I have enough depression, I have enough anxiety, I have an eating disorder, I have OCD, I have whatever I have. I don't need to prove that to explore my consciousness and to connect with my sacred. So all three models are important. And it's not necessarily linear. You might be attracted to two of the models. So then it's a question of just where do you feel that you're going to have the best possible experience for you?
Yeah.
And the questions are really the same when you're talking about an underground ceremonial provider or a psychedelic tourism experience where you fly to Jamaica or Peru or Mexico or the Netherlands, or illegal ketamine. It's how are you going to help my mindset? So it's source set setting. Where do your drugs come from? How do you help my mindset to make sure I'm safe and I'm taken care of? And then what is the setting that you're going to provide for me for this experience? Are there going to be other people? Is there going to be music? Is it going to be, is there going to be talking? Is there going to be touching? What are the rules of this process? And then what, and then back to mindset, and what do you do for me afterwards? So I'm going to have all this experience. How do I process it? And do I get to work through you or do I go work through somebody else?
I think that having someone to hold space for you too, and not just going into it blindly, right? I love that you brought that up because safety is important with these journeys.
It is. Until you understand how in another world you are in psychedelics, what we call a non-ordinary state of consciousness. During that time, you're incredibly vulnerable. So having people watching you to keep you safe, the probability of something physically going wrong during that experience is pretty low. We don't say anything safe, but the risk is reduced. These medicines relative to medicines that are legal,
right,
are relatively safe, but that doesn't change the human behaviors that can happen around you. So why do we use in the ceremonies that I participate in a male and a female facilitator? It's to have two sets of energy. It's to have two sets of eyes. Why do we typically have four musicians and a couple sitters in addition to them? Again, additional eyes, additional support for the experience. So when I get really nervous when people talk about doing an experience and there's just one person in the room with them. And again, it might be fine, but it also might not be.
Right. And until you get in that mind space, like you were talking about, there's no knowing, there's no predicting, there's no.
Exactly. Yeah. And these are the powerful, powerful medicines. And can be used in all sorts of different manners.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the resource that you've provided for the collective. That's absolutely incredible. Psychedelics for Everyone. And just the cover alone spoke to me. When I first looked at it, I was like, this is amazing. Like, this took some thought.
That's funny. My daughter came up with that concept.
No way.
Yeah. It actually came up with, I had three different book cover concepts. She just told me I was wrong. She said, go away. I came back 20 minutes later and she said, here it is. And then we had the artist for the book company actually do the make it what you see, but it was her, it's all her concept. It was very cool.
That's incredible. It spoke to me on a deep level.
I love that. It's funny. People ask me all the time, but like, well, do you really think everyone should take a psychedelic? It's like, absolutely not. No, not everyone should take a psychedelic. There are people who have pre-existing conditions, who are taking different medications, who have family histories, and they're not a good candidate. And psychedelics are good for society. And that's the message I'm trying to get out there, whether it's for you, whether it's for someone you love, or whether it's just having the information so that you can make an informed decision at election time. These are powerful medicines, and we haven't had a shift in mental health in America since the creation of the SSRI over 50 years ago. And we have an epidemic of loneliness and depression and anxiety. It is, it's time to connect, and it's time to remember how powerful we all are.
Yeah, coming home to that remembrance, I think, is really important as a collective, especially right now.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world, and it can be beautiful and tragic at the same time.
Yeah. So I want to lean into the phrase "reclaiming your true self," right? How do we honor that phrase in our day-to-day lives, no matter who's listening right now? I started doing this thing a few months ago, and it's been so amazing to see the feedback from the audience. Now it's really changing their life on being able to implement things right away. So whether that's learning how to set an intention, because a lot of people don't even know that simplistic tool that's really incredible with anything you do, right? And so what are three things, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here, What are three things that the audience can start implementing right away if they're like, yes, I want to do this. This was my sign. Like, this aligns for me. What are three things on really reclaiming their true selves that they can start doing to get the wheel rolling?
I mean, the first and foremost is the positive affirmation. Look in the mirror or say to yourself out loud that I'm a beautiful being.
Yeah.
And that I'm in charge of my life. The psychedelics do help remember that you don't need to do anything to be worthy of love. You are worthy of love. We are taught from such an early age to give up our agency, to give up our power, and to say, I'm taking it back. And I recognize I don't need the world to change for me to be happy. I am happy, or I am full of joy. I can still experience depression and be happy at the same time, and that's okay. I think saying out loud that my emotions are my emotions, and they're valid, and that's okay. We're so quick to numb in our society. We're so quick to say, oh, you're feeling bad. Let's give you some medicine. Those emotions are powerful healing that is happening. Those emotions are thoughts that haven't been translated into words yet. Mm-hmm. So maybe we don't want to rush through those. And we know when there's a difference. We know when someone needs to be stabilized versus this is healing. This is growing. This is processing. This will pass.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you suggest when people start to get that inner mean guy or inner mean girl, that dialogue happening, you know, first when we're still in that theta space, first thing in the morning, right before bed? That.
I think the first is just recognizing that you are not your thoughts. That you can sit there and just, okay, I'm having this thought. There it goes. I don't need to be that thought. I don't need to agree with that thought. I just had that thought. And then reminding ourselves that, okay, I am not my thoughts. Okay. And then again, I still think those back to the positive affirmations. This is my movie. This is my life. I am worthy of love. I am enough.
Oof. So much goodness. And I think too, when we start our journey, we want to put ourselves in this box, right? Like, we're so trained, like you said, from such a young age, right and wrong, black and white. And like, there's some beauty in the gray when we can start. One of the things that changed my life, I'll never forget, because I was raised very religious, like fire and brimstone. And so obviously the work I do now was frowned upon in the religion that I was raised on. And so I had to ask myself, like, consciously, continually ask myself, when a thought would pop up, I would be like, okay, but why do you think that? And I would have this internal dialogue and I would make myself answer. So for me, it was when I was driving, like that was when my head got the busiest. And a thought would pop up and I would literally just sit and be like, okay, where did this come from? And it would stem back. And I could, when I finally got to the root of where it stemmed back to, I could be like, okay, so is this your value or is this their value? And how does this align with what your soul wants and the Dharma that we're on and all the things? And when I could break it down and be comfortable in that gray area, it was really beautiful and allowed me so much freedom to process in a way that I had never experienced before.
Yeah, that's deep work. When you're able to go back and look at all of the programming that we've received and recognize, wow, that thought was my parents' thought. I'm this, or I'm behaving like this because my mom wanted me to behave like this, or I'm behaving like this because I wanted to please my father. Or I'm behaving like this because I'm scared of repeating something that happened to me when I was 16 or 9.
Yeah.
And we don't, as a general rule, we don't make time in our lives to stop and ask those questions. Where did that come from? Or to work backwards, what were the things in my childhood that I really didn't like? Okay, document all those. Why didn't I like them? Document that. What am I doing now? That's exactly what I didn't like then to my kids or my partner. It's a really good exercise.
Powerful work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's deep, deep programming. Mm-hmm. And handing our agency over and over and over again for all sorts of reasons, but reasons based on a scarcity-based society where there's, quote, not enough for everybody. And we take that power back and we say, there's plenty. And I don't need these attachments. I don't need all these things I thought I needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really does change how we choose to spend our time when we need to make money and how we choose to spend our time when we're outside of making money and recognizing it's all the same life. There is no separation between work and family. It's all life. So how are we bringing ourselves to the different things that we do in this life?
The interconnectedness. I really love the way you just put that. I was processing it in my head. I've never heard it put like that. That was beautiful. Because we do separate everything. The same with, I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about Western medicine. If I'm hit by a car, I'm so grateful for it. But it's separated. Our mental health, our emotional health, our physical health. We're taught from so itty bitty to separate everything. You have your career, you have your love life, you have your family life. But really, like you just said, it's all connected.
And this is actually, Courtney, what you just touched on is really interesting in the world of psychedelics. In the old days, there was just healer, and the healer was a spiritual healer and a medical healer. And in Western society, we have separated those roles where the pure science goes to the doctors and the, what am I going to, I'm afraid of death, goes to the clergy. But psychedelics, I believe, dance in both areas. And I think it's totally fair to say, well, if we were to give psychedelics only to the clergy, that it would be a fair argument to say, well, they don't have the latest knowledge of my brain and my body to keep me as safe. Okay. But if we give it all to medical, they don't have enough understanding of the spiritual realm to help me really explore consciousness. So we need, and I believe it's happening, a reconciliation between medical and spiritual, and a way to practice where everybody is working above ground and everybody is sharing knowledge. And people are going and entering the space based on where they're comfortable entering it. But the knowledge is shared between the two and they're working together. Yeah. And I think that's a beautiful vision for the future of psychedelics.
Absolutely. Where can we, or do you have a course that's attached to the book yet or anything that people can go deeper if they want to outside of the book?
Yeah, I do. I have a journal. So I had Psychedelics for Everyone is the first book. It's available everywhere books are sold. And there's an Audible version where I read all the parts I wrote. And I have a woman who reads all the parts that women wrote. But then I also have a journal called Beyond the Trip. It's also available on Amazon. But if you found yourself with psychedelic medicine, either legal with ketamine or, again, ceremonial, this gives you work up front for intention setting. And then it gives you something to document your journey itself, and then 4 weeks of integration exercises and a 30-day gratitude journal all in one book. So that is another resource that's out there. And then I do a lot of work with in the ceremonial space, and I'm happy to talk with people about that. And on at mattzeman.com, you can go there and set up a meeting with me, and I'm happy to talk about just different options in the ceremonial world for people if they're interested.
Thank you, Matt. This was an incredible episode, and the work that you're doing for the collective is quite changing the world, quite literally, right?
We're co-creating this together, Courtney. This is you have spent a lot of time to build the trust of the people who listen to you. You've covered a lot of topics and you're in a range of things on your podcast, which keeps them coming back. And then you're curating content and asking questions that you believe is going to help move this forward and move our collective consciousness forward. So I'm super appreciative of what you do.
Thank you very much. I almost feel like we need like a part two here. There's so many questions I have left. Maybe we'll connect always about do a part two if you're up
there
for
we
it.
Go.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, absolutely. But I appreciate you having me on very much. And thank you for doing the work that you do and not being afraid to mix and match tools in your toolkit.
Thank you very much, Matt. To be continued.
Perfect.
Thank you for joining us on your enlightening journey today, and I am honored to have you hang with us at The Sweetest Little Life. If you've enjoyed your exploration, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Your feedback fuels our shared odyssey and gets us to more people to help. Remember, the key to a harmonious life lies within you. It's not some guru. You have the key. As we part ways, carry the wisdom you've gathered into your daily existence. Embrace the present, cultivate gratitude, and be a beacon of positivity in this world. Stay connected with us on social media to continue the conversation. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, all the things at The Sweetest Little Life. Until next time, may your path be illuminated, your spirit be resilient, and your heart be full of compassion. This is Courtney Hansen signing off with love, light, and an internal quest for spiritual growth. Keep shining, beautiful souls.